To begin, the month three investor Lead2Your briefing we're presenting covers the trading period from the 1st of March 2020 to the 31st. And as the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills issued under contract for assets, goods, and services supplied to investment quality companies or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. What this actually means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another company. These tend to be large companies that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium-sized suppliers. We call these micro to medium-sized businesses originators because they originate the debt obligation transaction that creates the ETR that are subsequently traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to the smaller one, and credit exchange buy these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. By doing that, when the ETR is settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discount that it was purchased at creates a margin, and that's the margin that creates the yield or return for investors. So as the briefing states, at the end of March, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 31.18 million. RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. So a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium sized business or the originator and Credit Exchange. The revolving sale agreement is a commitment by that originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, it's for a year. So, for example, let's say an originator needs a revolving credit facility of $250,000 in order to run their business. They'll come along to us, much like they would go to a bank, and they apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer them the $250,000 on a revolving basis, let's say every 60 days, they must agree to sell us $250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, or $1.5 million worth of ETR every 12 months. In other words, six times $250,000 is $1.5 million per annum. So this commitment to sell the $1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange is then documented in that revolving sale agreement, or RSA. And as stated at the end of March, we held 31.18 million worth of these RSA contracts. Then the briefing goes on to say that there was 25.89 million fully allocated. What this means is at the end of March, the value of ETR that we held was 26 million, or in other words, there was 25.89 million of investors' funds actually in the market. Moving on to the next figure, it states that investors redeemed 4.51 million of their funds in March, meaning they took out 4.51 million. This is an unusually large amount of withdrawals for this time of year. I figure this magnitude would be more commonplace in October or November when investors are settling their tax bill, for example. But we know the reason for such a high number last month was due mainly to some of our professional investors needing cash to shore up more margin calls, excuse me, and cash calls on bond or equity trades that were badly hit by the mid-market crash last month. For those of you unfamiliar with the distinction, the vast majority of the investors on the exchange are retail investors, meaning that they must be referred to us by a financial advisor or an intermediary. So we, in Credit Exchange, we won't take funds from a member of the public without being properly advised by a recognized investment advisor like many of you on this call, for example. There are, however, a few select professional investors that come directly to us without the need for an intermediary because we vetted them and approved them as such. And it was this class of professional investor that made up the majority of the 4.5 redemptions during March. There were some other retail investors, some of your clients maybe, that made up the balance. And these were people being a little bit nervous or extra cautious about the potential impact that the coronavirus might have on business. If you got the opportunity to read our COVID-19 briefing, you'd have seen that, if anything, the current crisis will be good for investable ETR investors, which brings me nicely to discussing the ETR Advantage duration figure of 117 days on the right of the document. We call this ETR average duration the credit index, and this is our measure of the average time it takes for an ETR to get settled. So in other words, from the day that an ETR is issued, it's the number of days it takes for the debtor or obligor to pay the ETR in order to extinguish their debt or liability to us. So that number was 117 days at the end of March. And that's the highest number that we've had on record in the last 7 or more years. If you compare that to last year, the credit index was 78. So this means on average it took 78 days for ETR to settle last year. In other words, they were settling roughly 5 times a year. At 117 days, it means that those ETR are now going to settle 3 times a year. So in simple terms, if an originator needed a revolving credit facility of $100,000 to run their business last year, they now need roughly $160,000 to fund their business this year, simply by the fact that it's taking much longer to get paid. I think, based on comments you were making at the start, John, I think that number is going to rise even further, because a lot of companies, although the lockdown occurred on the 23rd of March, there was still a credit or receivables or accounting function in most companies. But we're now in the depths of this lockdown, and the next payment will be the last week of April, maybe as late as the last Thursday being the 30th of April. So I would expect that number to rise even further. But going back to the point, if an originator needed $100,000 last year from us to run their business, they need further funding this year, which is how we are going to need more funds from investors to meet that demand. I won't talk about the risk of default because Andrew will cover that later. But suffice to say that in January, we predicted a strong growth in the exchange's business during 2020, and the coronavirus has underpinned that prediction for us. Moving back to the period trading value of 9.36 million, this figure means that during March, we purchased new ETR with a total value of around 9 million. And then below that, you will see in the same period, the treasury performance was just over 8 million. This means we spent 9 million and collected 8 million during March. So we monitor this very carefully to ensure there's a balance of funds in versus funds out, so that it remains stable and within the control parameters that are set down by Trade Desk and Treasury. So that's a pretty tight spread at 8 versus 9. Moving to the center of the document, where we have the list of the 10 largest investable holdings and the top rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organization owed the exchange the largest amount of money at the month end, 31st. And as you can see, Huawei was the largest debtor, with other companies like HSE, Atradius, Vodafone, and the other ones listed there. On the right, then, it lists the highest rated debtors. They're the highest rated ones, regardless of the amount of money, or amount of or size of their liability. At the particular day in question, none of these were actually investment grade or had an investment grade rating. So it's simply a selection of the most creditworthy. Moving down to the pie chart below that, this basically demonstrates the continued diversification of the ETR across the market. Again, Andrew will explain that in a little bit more detail in the second half of this presentation, but suffice to say, this diversification covers every industry sector according to the European classification for industry sectors using the NACE categorization system. So, as you can see, pretty well spread across every industry sector. Then with regard to the actual performance of the exchange in March of this year versus March last year, there was a slight drop in the volume of trading of just over 8%, but in line with our growth forecast for the exchange for 2020, we had a significant increase in the trade value of 14.32%. So in all, by quarter end Q1 2020, we were 30% ahead of our growth projections by the end of last quarter. And we can see at the moment that the current month, we will see a drop in the volume and indeed the value that's going to be traded, simply because the majority of businesses in Ireland, if not worldwide, are not functioning properly. So if they're not actually closed, they're certainly running on a skeleton staff and skeleton business. So we, like everybody else, need these companies to go back to work. Once they do, we will see a sharp increase in volumes and values for the remainder of the year. Then you can see that we had more than 6,000 creditors or debtors and creditors at the month end, and relative to the number of trading companies in Ireland, this is a statistically significant strong reference point when considering the validity of our credit index. In other words, the credit index is a strong indicator of how credit control and payment cycles are performing in Ireland at any moment. To finish up on our performance in March, the largest single trade was 2.97 million. As Andrew will explain later, the average value of an ETR is circa 2,000. But we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was for just under 3 million. This ETR was a letter of credit from Bank ABC in London to cover the payment for a shipment of cattle from Ireland to Turkey for an originator that began trading with us in 2019. And then last but not least, we've got the trend of the investor's yield or buy price during March of this year. You can see it averaged 1.838. Having started at a high of 1.895, it dipped as low as 1.744 mid-month, and then ended the period on the lower rate than it had started at 1.834. As most of you are aware, this rate changes daily. It can be checked anytime on the investable.com website homepage. But to discuss the trend a little bit more in detail, the graph on the right shows the movements during last month. And as the briefing states, we expect to see the prevailing rate for the last year, which has been below 1.9 or certainly 2% for 12 months or more. I expect to see that turn and grow upward as we see more originators requiring more demand later this quarter and certainly into quarter three. And then the briefing ends with a repeat of the active RSA or evolving sale agreement value of 31.18 million. So that concludes the explanation of that document. If any of you wish to speak after this call. Let me know and I'll arrange to speak to you then. If there are any immediate questions, may I ask you to introduce yourself first and then pose your question. And also the questions can be directed to each other in the general context of this forum so that participants can answer each other. So do we have any immediate questions? Okay, well, if I was a participant in this meeting, my question would be, is that particular transaction of 2.97 million during March, is that within the parameters of what the trading policy of the exchange has set out? And the answer to that question would be very much so. That particular ETR was, as it says was from a bank based in London for a letter of credit. The underlying or obligor bank was a bank in Turkey, a wholly owned state bank. And then below that again, we had security of farm and land assets to prop up the overall sale. So if there was any default or complete default or partial default of that transaction, we had more than two levels of support behind it. So that would be a kind of question that I would certainly want to ask. If anyone has any other questions, please feel free. Okie dokie. Then I will pass you on to Andrew.
Yeah, hi, Patrick. Again, thanks everybody for tuning in. So as Patrick explains now, we're going to switch over to the brochure. So before we begin, can I just make sure that everybody has the investable ETR brochure in front of them? So that's either a hard copy or the soft copy that would have been attached in the invite. And if you don't have that one in front of you, a real quick way to get it is just to go on to the investable website. So as Patrick mentioned before, that's investable.com. So I'll give you a second to do that. You go to the homepage, click into it, and you scroll right down to the bottom. And just the bottom left-hand corner, there's a white writing, and it says download product information. And if you click on that, it will open up the brochure for you. So just give you a couple of seconds for everybody just to make sure they have one. Okay, so that's perfect. So we'll begin. So I'm going to start on page one, and then we're going to move from there. So as Patrick explained, ETR stands for Exchange Traded Receivable. But what does Exchange Traded Receivable actually mean? So Exchange Traded Receivable is an opportunity to an investor to buy a contract between a large and a small company that has been somewhat discounted. This then will compete directly against the bank deposit in the same way that you are able to move your funds in and out of a bank deposit. Our investments are also on demand. So just as the accounts and the contract is discounted between the large and small company, this is where we will actually make the return, which we can then produce for your investor. So that's a little quick bit about the ETR. And as we're going to move on, we'll go to page 8. So if you switch over all to page 8, the right at the back of the documents, or the last page if you're scrolling on the computer, you can see at the very top of the page, there's a big orange diagram. So this diagram is basically an overall summary of a transaction within Credit Exchange itself. On the right, you have the money coming in through the investor, and on the left, you have the money going out to the originator. So I'm going to go through this now for everybody. So for the ease of discussion, we're going to use 100,000 euro, so as the number which we're going to talk about. So when we start on day one, the investor, which would be your guys' clients, would provide us with 100,000 euro invested, and then the 94,000, so 94%, is put up as the purchase payment price and put into the QuizClose account. This is a segregated account where we keep the investor's funds. So that's the first part, and the money is now in Credit Exchange. On day two, the originator, so our clients, will put up the ETR. This is the discounted contract between the large and the small company. From here, it needs to be confirmed, approved, and authorized. Not until any of that is done will this move forward, and this is done by our trade team. So once this is done, then we'll move to the next step, which is on day three, and the originator will receive 80%. So the originator will receive 80,000 of the 94,000 that was sent in by the investor. Of that remaining 14,000 that hasn't been released, that will go back to an account called the LDC, This is known as the loss and default account, and it will be held there for the time being. I'll go through the LDC in a little bit more once we get further into the presentation. So that's the first part done. The investor has put up the funds and they've gone out to the originator. So now we need to wait until the contract has been settled. So we're going to go to point five, right in the middle of the diagram. And this is when, on day 90, the debtor must settle the contract. So the contract is going to be settled for 100%. The full 100,000 euro must enter credit exchange. So once the full 100% has entered credit exchange, what next part will happen is that on day 91, 95%, so 95,000, will go back to the investor. So as you can see here, the investor has put in 94,000 on day one, and then on day 91, they've received 95,000 back, which is their 1,000 euro profit. So the debtor paid 100,000 in, and we only sent back 95. So what's happened at the remaining five? So the remaining five plus the 14 that we sent to the LDC are going to combine and go to the originator in the 19% payment. So this is known as the reserve. Again, I'm going to go through this bit a little bit more when we get further into the presentation, but the reserve will only ever be released when the full 100% or 100,000 euro has been settled by the debtor. So as you can see, the originator has only ever received 99, with that 1% being the 1% extra that gets returned to the investor as their return for putting up the funds. So that is an overall summary of the transaction within Credit Exchange, and it shows the money coming in again to the investor, going back to the originator, and coming back in and going back to the originator and investor with the discounted. So now, that's page 8. We're going to skip and go into sides of the document on page 4. So I'll give you a second. So on page 4, we're going to talk about diversification. And you're going to see another pie chart, just like the one we talked about in the briefing there a couple of minutes ago. So as Patrick explained, this pie chart shows the diversification within Investable and how the funds are invested. So from here, we need to talk about diversification and how we mitigate the risk within our investments. So the first three rules of investing are diversify, diversify, diversify. So point one on our diversification, you can see is the pie chart itself. You can see all the different sectors that we're invested in, the risk is then spread across multiple industries within all these sectors. So that is point one. So already we're starting to mitigate risk by making sure we're not putting all our eggs in the one basket. Point two, we go into, within each sector, there's actually a further pie chart in there where everything itself is split. So, for example, if we were to take wholesale and retail, you could nearly take wholesale as its own branch or own sector and retail within it. So if you were to take in retail, you could look at food stores, technology stores, clothes stores. Each within there could be its own sector. So we have different ones in there that we're already spreading the risk across, and again, diversifying and diversifying and diversifying. And then point three, as Patrick explained before, the actual average value is only 2,000 euro of the average ETR. So go back to our example we used of 100,000 euro coming in as an investment. So if the average value is 2,000, you could have a 1.50 ETRs. As then Patrick mentioned again, it could actually be lower. We've traded less than a euro. We've traded multiple different values. So any possible permutation that you can think of could be the actual way your investments are made up. So this itself spreads out the risk. So no investor will have their funds spread into one investment. The more investments they have, the more the market, the risk is spread, and the more it's mitigated. So the more we can diversify, the less risk we have. So that's page 4. So from there, we're going to now look at page 5. So just across or scroll down one. So this is the 4-tier capital protection. So this is going to explain the levels of protection we've brought in to further mitigate the risk in our own policies within the company. So on a quick summary, we have 4 levels: ETR offset, reserve, loss and default, and AIG insurance. So we're going to start with level 1, the ETR offset. In simple, this is when an unpaid ETR is replaced by a new eligible ETR. So to use this as an example would be if a farmer who is meant to supply eggs to Tesco. He supplies the eggs to Tesco, and after doing this, he issues the contract on our exchange, goes through the transaction process, and is bought by an investor, and the funds are released to him. After inspection of the eggs, Tesco have realized that they're either cracked, or they're bad quality, or they're not up to the standard they'd expected. So Tesco are going to issue or want a credit note. So that means the full value they will not pay. And because we're the ones expecting a full 100% from Tesco, we're going to be the ones without money. So what we have to do here is we have to get the originator to replace this. So the originator will then issue a new set of eggs to Tesco. And instead of issuing them a new invoice, what he will do is then put that invoice on our exchange and swap it out for the bad invoice that is now null and void. So we have swapped out the two invoices. They are now for the same value. Tesco are now happy because they've got their eggs and they're going to pay. And the originator has to take the payments or the default on their side because they supplied bad eggs. So that's level one. So we're into level two now. This is the reserve. So I mentioned at the start, the originator is only going to receive 80,000 euro. So 80% of the money they're looking for. We do this to keep a bit in reserve so that we can only release it when they actually pay the 100%. So as I said, it's 80-20 and the 20,000 is left. The farmer from our Tesco example is not going to receive his 20% or his 20,000 until Tesco have paid the full 100,000. The reason we do this is slightly for if one originator has 10 contracts with us. If two of them go bad, we actually have within our own funds holding on the originator enough to cover the losses or to cover the costs. This is our own way of protecting ourselves and protecting the investors' money. So from level one and level two, the ECR offset and the reserve, we actually cover 99% of any defaults or debts that are delayed or go bad. So within internal policies that we've put in place, we're covering 99% of any problems. So if level one and level two have failed, we move on to level three. So this is known as the loss and default. So this was the LDC where the 14% went at the start of the diagram. So what the LDC is, or the loss and default is, it's an account of cash that we have built up over running of the company over the 7 years we've been in business. This is currently standing at an excess of 10 million. So again, if we look at 10 million compared to the average value of 2,000, you'd be nearly looking at 5,000 contracts before we even look at anything else. So the way it works is that if one contract goes bad, it fails at level one and fails at level two of protection, we will step in and pay out and make sure the client or you're the investor gets their money back before anything else happens. So as I said, that's 5,000 contracts we would be looking at before anything else needs to be done. So we will use this fund and keep paying out on those contracts, and then we will chase the funds from the debtor or the originator. So that's level one, two, and three. Next, we're going to go to level four, which is AIG insurance. So the AIG insurance works in a similar way to the loss and default account, but in the fact that it's just an insurance policy taken out with AIG on the investable market. So the insurance policy is up to a 6 million euro. So again, it works in the same way, is that once level one and two have failed, we've emptied the LDC account, we move on to level four. So we're now adding another 3,000 contracts to our 5,000 that we've already put in protection. So we will then claim on this if we need to, or if level one, two, and three have failed, and the clients will be paid out. We've only ever actually had to use AIG once, and that has been actually our own choice. Our decision on this was the fact that we're paying for this every year. We want to know what works. We want to know how long it's going to take and if it is, how easy the process it is. So it happened once and that's it, and it hasn't happened since. And again, as I mentioned, it was by our own choice and for our own decision. So that, again, is the four-tier capital protection. And next, and it shows you the four ways that we put in protocols to mitigate the risk further. So next, we're going to go on to page six. So if you just want to flip over the page. And within here, you have the investable ETR examples. So we're going to go through these examples, and I'm going to show you some things about them. So example one is about a secondary school. So this is an entity of a school using the school bursary, so a trusted fund, and they're putting in 700,000 euros. So they're choosing to put their funds with us instead of a deposit account. So they're putting it in for 12 months. They're redeeming on today 297, and they're getting a yield of 11,550. What this is showing us is that actually, even if you redeem early, you still get your yield. So there's no, if you leave 6 months, you don't get anything. If you leave after 6 months, or in this example, 297 days, you'll get 297 days worth of interest. When you or your clients logs on to our portal, you can actually see your interest building up day by day. So this, you can see that maybe you gain 2 or 3 euro, or depending on the size of the investment, more every time you log in. So back to the example, they then reinvested it 242 days later, and they put it back in 350,000. So that's example one, and we're now on sample two. So we're going to talk about a married couple here, and they're using pension savings. So what we're actually going to explain for why they're using this is that they have to, the man in the couple is actually about to turn to pension age, and so he wants to take all his assets into cash, but still earn interest on it. So what he's doing in this instance is putting everything from his pension of 483,017 euro into us. So from here, you can also see that we also accept pension funds. We've seen actually quite a rise in self-administrated pensions, such as AMRFs, ARFs, and PRSAs coming into us in the most recent years. So these are type of investments that are becoming popular with ourselves. Then, as you can see, he kept it in for 12 months. And on day 365, you can see the yield was 9,660.34. So they then took and reinvested at maturity. They took their yield and left in 100,000 euro with us to keep earning interest on it. So then we're going to go to sample three. So we're going to talk about a private company here. So as you can see, we also accept company funds, and you can see they're putting in profit. So if a company makes profit, they have to pay tax on that. But instead, they're putting in the tax, the profits into us, 150,000 euro. They're going to put it in for 12 months, and then at maturity, they're going to take their coupon, and then they're going to reinvest it for 150,000. So the company puts in for 12,000 or for 150,000 for 12 months, but they're making their profits. They have to pay tax on that. They put the funds in with us. The tax then, you're going to see here in a tax example, is because we're charged CGT. And as you can see, there's an allowance CGT. So we move into this, and we can see the married couple are putting in 100,000 euro with us. And this is the tax example, the fourth example as I'm talking about. As explained, we are charged CGT rather than DIRT, and this allows you a 1,270 euro tax break per person. So at a rate of 33%, the couple then put in their 100,000 euro. It is in for 12 months. At the end of the 12 months, they get their 2,000 euro. So as this 2,000 euro is actually under the 2,540 that they have to break before they pay any tax on it, they get it tax-free. So depending on your client's financial situations, other investments they have, they may actually be able to get all their yield with us tax-free. And then in the last block, we actually have shows the comparison if put into a deposit account. This is put in a deposit account at a buy rate of 0.200%. So first of all, that person's interest rate is already lower than ours. And second of all, you're still subject to DIRT. So if this married couple put their 100,000 euro into a deposit account at that rate at the same time, they would have only made 58 euro after paying DIRT. So from there, we've now looked at examples. We've looked at ETRs, we've looked at the risk, and we've looked at a transaction and how it goes. And then, as I said, that is the end of the brochure. And back to Patrick. We said there's a question and answer section here. Again, if anybody would like to ask any questions, please step forward, or any questions within yourselves, please step forward again. As Patrick said, introduce yourself, please, before a question, and then we can do it there. So, any questions?
I don't have any questions for you, Andrew, but thank you very much for that. Anyone on the call?
Just go back to the loss and default fund. And I may have missed this. What sort of value is in that built up in that fund at this point?
So currently it's in excess of 10 million.
Okay. Yeah. The AIG insurance, when we started back in 2013, The reason we took out the AIG insurance is for what we called an outlier event. And way back then, I used the example of a salmonella scare, and we were overexposed in the agri-food or agri-sector. And it would be AIG's policy that we would use to cover off overexposure in a particular industry sector. Of course, way back then, we couldn't have predicted COVID, but we had certainly planned for COVID by virtue of the fact that we had planned for outlier events. We are in an outlier event right now. Will we make any claims against AIG? That remains to be seen. We did have a call with them 2 weeks ago to discuss that very point. But the reserves that we have in the loss and default control of $10 million, largely speaking, those funds belong to us. There is a $3.8 million liability to originators. So if all of the originators who have ETR on the market all settled, for example, this afternoon, then we would be paying out 3.8 of that 10 million to them, but the remainder of those funds belong to us. They're discretionary and we can elect to use those, or because of the COVID thing, we might decide, well, we've 7 years of good favor built up with AIG. We're going to use their funds instead. It's purely a commercial decision, and we're privileged, I would say, to be in the position to have that option of using our funds or their funds. Either way, we have the investors' interests covered. Okie dokie.
Hello, Patrick. Noel Ford here. How are you?
I am good, Noel.
Just quickly there, and I know you've this covered off already with AIG. They're not going to be like any of the other insurers where they're saying, you know, pandemics aren't covered under...
yeah, you're insured until you need us. No.
Until you see, yeah, absolutely.
Thankfully, no, that's, they don't have one of those act of God or whatever events. No, they are, like any credit insurer of merit, they're absolutely exposed to COVID, and very much so. That insurance stacks up, which is what the call was about too. Oh, by the way, you do realize, and they were going, no, we fully realize our position. We're merely calling you to get a flavor for the state of affairs in Ireland in general, based on the volume of transactions that you do. So, no, we are well covered in AIG, and the policy is good.
Just looking there on the briefing as well, the hospitality sector doesn't seem to be making up a big portion of anything. It's only about 3.29%.
No.
Where would
yes.
you see the big problems arising? Would it be manufacturing or because wholesale and retail seems to be working very well?
Yeah. Very hard to see at this moment where the likely, you can obviously say, well, hospitality is in trouble. When will it resume normal business and when will they go back to being able to pay their bills or vice versa, get their bills paid? So hospitality is fairly easy. It's entirely dependent on when are people going to be allowed to go to hotels and so on and so forth. I think what's going to happen in a general context is we are entering a recession, whether we like it or not. I think it's going to be very severe. I think any company, lots of companies in every industry sector are going to have casualties. There are going to be plenty of companies that fail, and it will be a case of survival of the fittest. So even the most unlikely of companies has the potential to fail in the coming months. And the longer this lockdown continues, the higher the casualty number is going to be. So I can't physically put my finger on, well, manufacturing is going to be a problem, or the chemical sector is in have difficulties. Anything that's perishable, food, that's a problem. I heard or read recently that I didn't realize that when you delivered beer to a pub, it actually goes sour or becomes unusable within 3 or 4 weeks. So you can consider the millions of liters of alcohol that's been delivered around Ireland, all of which has gone off, and who's going to pick up that bill? I can't say specifically, oh, we'd be concerned about wholesale retail. Yes, of course, retail is a problem, but I can't say that there's one sector that's really COVID-free and no concerns, while as this one's overexposed. Bit early to call at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Okay, if there's no more questions, then I think we'll wrap up by saying, first of all, thank you very much all for taking the time to attend. It's very much appreciated. And obviously, we'll let you know when we're releasing next month. So thank you all, and keep well, as the expression goes.
And just in relation to this, I think it's a very good way of presenting it and explaining what's going on out there. Because we all tend to get it in the email and you give a quick glance and you go, that's good. But it's nice to see how it's working, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And where everything's going. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think there's good sense in having it. So we've started and we're going to continue.
Good.
All right. Well, thank you all. We will talk to you next month.
Perfect. Thank you all very much.
Bye-bye.